Chapter 41. Marjorie was tight-lipped when she and George told Ron that there was going to be a baby. She tried to smile, but Ron could see her heart wasn't in it. George didn't know that, though. He was worried about money. His gambling debts has worsened since he had the added expenses that came with not living at home. It was true that Marjorie earned a good salary for a woman, but each Thursday, George forked over half of his paycheck from the printing company to the two guys that showed up and were friendly enough, but wanted to be paid. "Who are these guys?" said Ron. "They're friends of George's." "They don't look like friends." "You're better off not knowing some things, Ronald." Ron felt stung. "Since when?" Marjorie was at her wit's end. She had already taken out 2 finance company loans. She couldn't get a third. He had promised twice that he was done gambling. Each time, he lied. Each time, he promised that it would be the last time. Ron had listened to these late-night confessions while they thought he was asleep. "I don't know what to do, Margie. I just can't seem to stop." "Don't you care about anybody but yourself?" "That's not it." "It must be the case. Otherwise, you wouldn't do this to me." George said, "What about the other bank book?" Marjorie looked at him in shocked disbelief. "You can't be serious. I've never touched that. Not even when we didn't have the rent. It's not my money." Ron knew what they were talking about now. When he was in second grade, he had begun a bank savings program in his school. Whenever he was given any money for birthdays or holidays, at least half of it went into the bank. His mother kept it for him. He didn't know how much there was. "We could use it to get out from under this," said George. "George, the two of you don't get along. How can I ask him for this?"
"You don't ask him. You tell him."
"You don't understand. You don't know what it used to be like between him and me. I can't just tell him. If I miss a payment, you know what will happen." "They aren't going to damage someone who pays, George. That wouldn't be good business. You know these guys most of your life." "That doesn't matter," said George morosely. 2 days later, Marjorie told Ron what she needed to do. She had gone to see Vinny Caputa, the Shy. He tallied up George's number for her. In addition to the $1,000 loan that they had at each of the finance companies, George was into Vinny for $1,500 more. Ron's bank book could wipe that out. The VIG was 10% of the balance each week. That meant that on $1,500, George was paying $150 a week in interest. It had to stop. The numbers would never allow them to climb out from under, and George would keep dreaming for that big hit that would make everything even. "If I pay it off, will you promise not to loan him any more money?" "I really can't do that, Marjorie. George is a friend." The irony of this would not allow her to hold her tongue. Is this what a friend does? What kind of a person ruins his friend's life? Vinny the Shy was a short, squat man with salt and pepper hair. They were Caruso's Ristorante. As a silent partner, Vinny owned half of the place. It gave him a declarable income and a spot to do business. Marjorie sat in front of her cold cup of coffee, thinking that none of these places knew how to make a good cup of coffee. She stared up at Vinny the Shy. "If you loan him any more money, I'll leave him."
"That's none of my business," said Vinny.
For 2 days, Marjorie agonized about what to do.
She was sick in the mornings now. It was an effort to get herself to work each day. But George said that it would pass and that she would feel better soon. "Ronald, I need a favor." "Sure." He knew it was coming. He had heard the conversation. He could read the resolute look on her face. "George and I need to borrow the money in your bank book," she said flatly. She had forced the words out. She hadn't wanted to say them, but here it was, and now she had said it. "I'll make sure that you get it back," she added. Ron felt the anger rise in him that George wasn't even there. He'd left this shitty job to his mother. "Just take it," said Ron. "Ronald, I'm sorry." "It isn't you. I know that." "Yes, it is. It's me here asking you." "It's your money, Mom. There wouldn't be me without you." "Would you like to go and visit Aunt Dottie? See if any of your old friends are around?" "Sure. When?" "Let's go now." From the appearance of the way that her life was now, a person who didn't know would think that Dorothy Thomas had any important friends. She dolled up in her minks and diamonds on Saturday nights when they went to the corner bar, but that didn't mean anything. Dorothy had once been married to the president of the Teamsters in Newark. She was on a first-name basis with Newark's mayor. She was friends with Peter Odino, who was a member of the House of Representatives. Marjorie explained what had happened. Dorothy's scowl was deep. "What are you doing with this loser?" "He's a hard worker." "He's dumb. He thinks that being a hard worker entitles him to be stupid." "Will you make a phone call?" "And say what?" "Get them to stop loaning him money." "I'd rather get them to break his legs." "Don't say that, Aunt Dottie. I'm pregnant." "Oh, for Christ's sakes, why did you do that?" "It just happened." "It never just happens." "Does Ron know?" "Yes." Marjorie paused. This last part was going to be more difficult. "He said that I could take his bank book to pay off the shy." Dorothy's gaze was razor sharp. "You really should be ashamed of yourself." Marjorie wanted with all her heart to remind her aunt that she had been a little girl in a rooming house with her grandmother, Dorothy's mother, when they were too poor to ride the bus and Dorothy was spending weekends on yachts. Dorothy shook her head. "I'll make the call. But Margie, if a man is hungry to gamble, he'll find a way to get the money."